Blog Talk Radio.
Same ones on for
right.
Everything, right?
Well, right.
So I would take the lighter color one, which is this one, because it'll show up better on the dark.
Okay. Got it.
That's my idea.
Now, I get it. So now let me just show you. The other one has the big handle and the little knob, right?
Yep. Hello?
Hi, my sounds like Stuart.
It is Stuart. Is this Mike? Michael?
Hi, Stuart. Michael. It is. If I'm
Michael, very good. So you're not on a landline because you haven't had a landline in 35 years, I understand that.
Well, a little bit more
and
like
it sounds
10.
Good.
Although
and it sounds
the funny
good.
Thing is, we have an optical line to our house, so my computer is tied into technically a landline, but not
right.
My phone.
I got it. Anyway, this is great, it sound, and it's got a great sound, so I'm going to put you on with Adrian, and we can get started as soon as you and she are ready. Hang on.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, Adrian. How are you?
Very, very good. So let me just tell you how we do this. We'll start the show. After we finish talking for a minute, we'll have about 10 seconds that will be quiet. Music will come on. I'll introduce the show, and I'll introduce you. And we have four segments. I know when they end. You don't. So if I tend to be talking a little bit at some point, it's because I don't want you to get cut off. And then we finish, and we get a chance to regroup again and say, oh, this is what we're going to discuss in the next segment. We do that four times. So, and I use this show a lot of ways. Of course, it does show on Biz Talk Radio, but it's also on all the podcasts. And then I make a very small two-minute video of it, video actually of your words, and that we can put on YouTube. And I put it on all my social media. And any place you want to use it, you can. I send it to you, too. Okay?
Thanks. That sounds good to me.
Good. Now, I want to make sure that I'm pronouncing everything correctly. So is it telomerase? Is that how you pronounce it?
The most common pronunciation is telomerase.
Okay. Telomerase.
But it depends where in the country, where in the world you are, too.
Okay. And then the name of the company is Telesite?
Telesite, correct.
Right, okay. Now, I do ask people, my guests, to give a URL and let people go to their website. Is that okay? Would you want to do that? And I also announce your book.
Oh, that's fine. It's just telesite.com for the website. The usual,
right.
You know, HTTP, /www. Yeah.
Now, I'm fascinated by the 1996 book, Reversing Human Aging, but is there another book to tell people about?
Yeah, there's that book. There was a textbook that's actually much better in many ways in 2004 for Oxford University Press, but nobody in our audience is likely to want
right.
that, but welcome to it. And then in 2015, I guess it was, there was a book called Telomerase Revolution that the Wall Street Journal praised as one of the best five science books of the year. And that's also quite readable for the public.
Okay. And it was the telomere revolution?
No, the telomerase revolution.
Oh, telomerase.
Telomerase, right.
Okay. So the way this is going to go, as you know, this is what Zan would call a retail show. The people who are listening, many of them are in the business of aging one way or another, but they're more gerontologists. They could be financial gerontologists, but mostly laymen. And the whole mission here is to take things that they don't know, like just telomeres, and make it accessible to them. So the questions I'm going to ask you are not the kind that somebody would ask you if you were in a group of geroscientists. And I'm going to start, though, with the fact that what you're looking at is Alzheimer's. And one of the first questions I'll ask you is, what is a telomere? So that when you say telomerase, what does that mean? There'll be some definition.
Sure.
Is that okay? Okay.
That's fine. Know that we're gonna start with Alzheimer's, but it's certainly not our only focus. It's just our primary strategic focus.
I'm going to ask that as well. Now, the other thing that I do want to know, if there's one thing you'd like to bring out and you would say, oh, I forgot to say that, what would it be? Because I will make sure I ask you that question.
It's just that aging is a lot more complicated than people think it is. Everybody, without even realizing it, thinks it's just entropy. It just happens. You just rust. Things fall apart. What do you expect? There's a lot more to it than that.
Okay, good. So I'm going. That will get asked. All right, Stu, we are ready to rock and roll.
Okay.
Now we have to be quiet.
When I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair on my head, not my shoulder.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. It's the Fountain of Truth about aging. And today, perhaps we're going to generate a little bit more truth than usual, because we have a very special guest today. And you all know this show. You all know that I ask every single person I interview, what do they really want to bring out? And in this particular case, Dr. Michael Fossil said, I want to bring out the fact that aging is a lot more complicated than you think. And we're going to be deep diving into that. Before, I just want you to know that those who get the most out of this show are also newsletter subscribers of mine. It's always free, never a penny to be paid, but you do have to subscribe. And you go to adrianberg.com, you'll see how to subscribe, and every Monday and Wednesday you will receive some hints and tips on successful aging and wonderful, wonderful access to webinars, seminars, and conferences that you would never be able to have ever. Because we're in a different world than most of my listeners are. We're in the world of geroprotection, and we're going to talk a lot about that today. So, Dr. Fossil, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me, Adrian. It's a pleasure to hear you.
Well, it's pretty exciting.
And to be here with you.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting stuff that we're going to be talking about today. Let's take a little bit of a dive first. You are involved, and you're the head honcho, one of the founders of Telesight, which is working on the looking at telomeres and telomere research, and which you call telomerase, for Alzheimer's. Now, I know that's just the beginning, but for our listeners, we have to do some definitions. First of all, let's start with the basic. What is telomeres before we worry about what telomerase could be? Explain what a telomere is.
Yeah, a telomere is the end of your chromosomes, and it's some people compare it to the piece at the end of your shoelace. It's actually a lot more complicated than that because it acts like the conductor of a symphony orchestra. It sort of sets the pace for gene expression, as it were. It picks the score and the tempo for the genes in some respects, particularly with regard to aging and aging disease.
Now, when we talk about telomerase, explain again what that means and why you're associating that with the possibility of Alzheimer's, not curing Alzheimer's once you get it, but not getting it in the first place.
Actually, we're going to aim to do a lot more than just prevent it. We're actually going to see if we can cure it. That's a sort of a gutsy thing to say, but that's what we're going to aim at. What telomerase is, and here I'm just going to leave it very simply, it's an enzyme, and it's a lot more than that, that actually relengthens the telomere. So as you get older, many of your telomeres tend to get shorter, and what telomerase does, among other things, is it tends to relengthen them.
Now this is a process. One of the things I know, this is our last definition. So we have telomeres. Telomeres are the ends of your cells. They shorten as you age. There's a funny thing we sometimes say, may your telomeres be long and prosper. And we have research that shows that we can extend the length so that you don't have the kind of cell damage that aging could bring. One of the things that Dr. Fossil just mentioned was gene expression. I'd like also to get a little bit of a definition of that before we bounce from understanding these to how they can impact the prevention or cure of Alzheimer's. So what is gene expression?
Well, I'm going to get into an analogy, which is I find a lot easier in a minute. But essentially, you have a set of genes, but the question is, what are they doing? It's not just do you have them, but are they expressed? For example, the genes in my toes are expressing a very different set of genes than what are being expressed in my brain or my heart. So you have genes that are almost identical throughout your body, but they're playing different tunes in a sense. So back to that symphony orchestra, you might say that every cell in your body has the exact same orchestra, same musicians and the same instruments, but they're all playing slightly different scores. One's playing Beethoven, one playing the Grateful Dead, the other is playing Pink Floyd. They're all playing different tunes. And so gene expression is a question of which tune they're playing and how they're playing it. What's the tempo? What's the score? But more or less, the violin and the oboe and the piano and everything is just the same throughout the body, pretty much.
So what we're believing, and we're stopping, this is something that we're beginning to rethink, that our genes are our destiny. And it may not be so. As geroscience develops and as you make advancements and others of your colleagues make advancements, actually the genes that we're born with become less and less impactful on how we're going to age, and many other things become more impactful. And let's take a look at Alzheimer's now. Alzheimer's, somebody said to me today, Dr. Fossil, a very famous gerontologist, actually, I was on the phone with her, said that studies show that people are more afraid of Alzheimer's than dying, and that those who aren't, it comes in second. So this is not something that we take lightly, and the National Institute on Aging puts a lot of money into looking at ways of curing Alzheimer's, and you have a very different view. In fact, the Journal of the Alzheimer's Association said that an article that you've published is one of the most important published ever in the field of Alzheimer's. So take some of these basic definitions you gave us and explain to us how you are looking at prevention and cure of Alzheimer's from this point of view of gene expression, telomerase, and so on.
Well, again, I'm going to use an analogy for a moment. The original Indiana Jones movie has a scene where Indiana and Sala are at the dig site, and they look at each other and they say they're digging in the wrong place. In many respects, that's what we've been doing with regard to Alzheimer's. We've been putting enormous resources into it, but we've been digging in the wrong place. So let me use another analogy. Let's go back 500 years, and we're dealing with smallpox, and the local healers in, say, Middle Europe are actually very smart, very knowledgeable about, for example, herbal medicine, but they can't conceive of invisible organisms that might cause disease, that is, microbes, in this case, viruses for smallpox.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is not that they don't know a lot and aren't bright and aren't putting a lot of work into trying to deal with smallpox. The problem is that they don't conceive of the disease in the right place. And that's, in a sense, what's been going on with Alzheimer's and, for that matter, aging in general. So, example, about 2 years ago, the Alzheimer's Association had me come to Washington to help organize this conference on animal models. Why does everything work in mice, nothing works in humans? And, of course,
right.
The truth is a lot of things don't work in mice either. But the question was, why is that? Why do things not work? And among other things, I said the problem is that we have targets like beta amyloid and tau tangles, and we have techniques, for example, monoclonal antibodies. But what we lack is an overall map to describe why we get beta amyloid and tau tangles and why we should use monoclonal antibodies. In short, we don't have an understanding of the disease, a systemic and unified model of the disease that not only explains Alzheimer's, but it should be able to explain why you get it at age 45 and I get it at age 95, why you get parts of it that have some motor components and I get just a cognitive component. Why is it that somebody gets Parkinson's and somebody else gets frontotemporal? Or for that matter, why is it that my dogs and cats, as they get older, are prone to the same sort of cognitive decline that you and I are? Can we explain all of that? And the answer is, I think we can. And it's not until we do that that we're going to make progress in actually trying to cure Alzheimer's. And I mean that we, you know, these days we are almost content with just being able to barely alter the vector of the disease as we go downhill. And I think we can do a lot better than that.
Well, you know, one of the things we're going to do in our next segment is take you up on what you had said at the very beginning to me, which was aging is a little more complicated than we think. And I think what you're saying that is that Alzheimer's is a little bit more holistic and complicated. I should also tell you that Reversing Human Aging is a book that was written in 1996 by Dr. Fossil. It's a breakthrough book, probably the first, about looking at aging as something that can actually be reversed or regenerative medicine. I don't want this to sound like science fiction. It's not. It's geroscience. So if this is of interest to you, I can tell you you cannot get this information anywhere else. So don't you go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me not even a bit, because I am happy and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
Okay, so we're going right on to the next segment. It's going to go the same way. This is great. And my first question is going to just relate to what we did before, which is your message was very hopeful. And how are you going about it? How are you? And I'll give the URL. And then we will talk a little bit about why everyone is not on this bandwagon, why we're stuck a little bit in the old way of looking at something. But first, I would like to hear from you how you're going about breaking this code, so to speak. So is that all right?
Yeah. For me, it's something that began almost 50 years ago, actually about 45 years ago when I was a grad student. And I noticed
but
that I was in...
Wait. I'm going to have you say, I'm going to tell Stuart that he should start us now. He's going to start the music, and we're going to go right into that just like that. Okay? Stu, go right ahead.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
And hello. This is Adrienne Berg with Generation Bowl, the fountain of truth, the fountain of truth about aging. And you do get an inside seat at some of the most important gerontological and geroscience webinars ever, because I'm working now, you know, as the executive director of the Catalyst Institute, working very closely with our original founders and supporters, Connexum. We just did a webcast on mitochondria, and you guys know what mitochondria is now, and that is very much part of self-strength. But if you would like to listen in on that conference, it's all recorded. Most of the people, and there were over 650 people who registered for it, were in the field of medicine or geroscience or gerontology in some way, and you're not. And yet you have a front seat. All you have to do is go to adrienneberg.com, adrienneberg.com. Become a member of our little tribe of newsletter subscribers. It's always free. And you will receive a link to that webcast. And actually, Dr. Fossil, I think, was an attendee and made great contributions in the chat room, and he's with us today. Dr. Fossil is one of the most renowned scientists in this field of aging. One of the books that was a breakthrough book, 1996, Reversing Human Aging was his book. So he's been toiling in this field for a long time. He's the founder and the inspiration behind a Telocyte. Please look at Telocyte, TelocyteE.com. Looking at ways of using telomeres and geroscience to prevent and cure Alzheimer's and a lot more. Now, Dr. Fossil, when we first left in our segment, we were talking about something very hopeful. You said it was very complicated to think about Alzheimer's. It's not just about intervening in one aspect or finding a protein issue. It's a lot more than that, but it can be done. So let's take a look at the it can be done side of that. How are you going about doing your trials, doing your research, so that we can bring this to the fore, and so it doesn't just stay in a laboratory?
Well, there are two answers to that. One is by far the more critical, which is to understand what it is you're doing in the first place. And the second is the mechanics of it. So, again, here's an example. Let's say that we were talking about Ebola virus a few years ago, and you could say that Ebola is headaches and white count and nausea and vomiting and bleeding and joint pain, and all those are true, but those aren't Ebola. Those are the outcomes of Ebola. And the same thing is kind of, you know, Ebola, what it really is a viral infection. It's not just symptoms. And the same thing is really true of Alzheimer's. It is not simply beta amyloid and tau tangles and mitochondrial dysfunction and thousands of other things. The question is, what's going on sort of under the surface once we get a little deeper and ask ourselves more carefully? We can do the same thing with aging in general. You know, we could say aging is gray hair and memory loss and muscle weakness and osteoarthritis. Those aren't aging. There are things that happen when we age, but they're not aging itself. And when we go deeper in, we could look at things like, you know, declining DNA repair and methylation changes and telomere shortening. But those aren't aging. They are things that happen during aging. The same thing is true when we look at any set of biomarkers. There are whole conferences on biomarkers and aging. But those aren't aging any more than my gray hair is aging. It's an outcome of aging, but it's not the process. So with Alzheimer's, we're looking at the same thing. And the same thing is true genetically, whether you're looking at APOE4 genes or presenilin genes. Those have been linked to Alzheimer's, but they're not Alzheimer's. They're something that has to do with Alzheimer's, but they're not the disease itself. So the first thing we need to do is understand what is really going on, how do those all fit together, and then the question is, where's the optimal point of intervention? So let me give you a different example. Let's say that you've got osteoarthritis. Well, one way we could intervene is by giving you an artificial joint. But is that really the optimal? Is that the cheapest? Is that the least risky? Is that the least painful? Is that the most effective? Probably not, but it's what we have. But the same thing is true here. You know, if I wanted to lower your risk of heart attacks, I could lower your blood pressure, control your blood glucose, Have you exercised, changed your diet? I could do lots of things. We could give you a heart transplant, but or a coronary bypass graft. We'll put you on statins. But is that really the optimal point of intervention, humanly, clinically, financially, all of those ways? That's where we are with regard to Alzheimer's. And I think that we know the most effective point of intervention, and it is not beta amyloid, nor is it tau tangles. It's something a little more sophisticated than that. Now, what
can
I tell you?
That's, of course, what you that's what you're working on right now. And the question here is, why is it that when I do look at the NIA, and for those who don't know, most of my listeners know, that's the National Institute on Aging, gets the money from the National Institute on Health. Some people have made a joke, not such a joke, saying that the NIA actually doesn't stand for the National Institute on Aging. It stands for the National Institute on Alzheimer's. Why? Because so much of the money, and so much, it's staggering, goes to the kind of research you're saying is not enough. And in fact, most people in the field are frustrated. Why do you think they're looking at it one way instead of another way, and will that change soon?
Well, I think it's just, it's simple, and it's just sort of human nature. You know, again, when I go to some of these conferences on aging, and they talk about what causes aging, you'll find some groups, for example, will talk about a whole list of little things that they put together as causes of aging. But there's, again, there's just a whole set of biomarkers. Example, here's a list from something that many of your listeners know. They talk about 9 points, you know, genomic instability,
right,
telomere attrition, epigenetic. Right. And not to mention
the hallmarks of aging, inflammation,
yes.
Mitochondria decline. Yeah, we kind of do know it. And if you don't, folks, by the way, I've written all about it in my blog, Aging for Beginners. So you can find that out too. If you're newsletter subscribers, I just want to get the information out, Dr. Fossil, but they do know.
Please
so you
do.
Have these different hallmarks of aging.
Those are essentially just a more sophisticated way of saying things like gray hair and aching joints and arthritis and wrinkles. You're being a little more sophisticated, a little more academic and technical, but it's still only a list of outcomes. It's a list of signs and symptoms, this time at the cellular level, but they're still not the process. It doesn't explain why these things happen. And the assumption is that all these things just happen and they're independent, but they're not. They're part of a unified process, to use your word, holistic. There's something going on that is a very a dynamic process that's happening with all of these things together. It's not simply a matter of, well, we can deal with the first one, and we can deal with the second one, and we can deal with the third one. It's a collection of things. It's the process underneath it. It's that unified systems process that's going on that we need to understand. And frankly, that's a lot harder for people to grasp, and that's part of the issue we have here. Again, it's like trying to treat, as I say, smallpox. If you're just going after signs and symptoms, you can do that. But what you really need to do is understand what causes it and try to fix it. The same is true of COVID. It's not enough to treat the, for example, I could put you on oxygen and give you things for your blood pressure and for your aches and pain, but that's not treating COVID, that's treating the symptoms. The same thing is true with these 9 hallmarks of aging. They're not aging. They are hallmarks. But that's not enough. They're not the underlying process. And once we begin to understand that, then we can begin to target the optimal point of intervention and do things like reverse the aging process at the cellular and genetic level, which, by the way, was first accomplished 23 years ago this year in human cells.
Now, here's the thing. When we start to talk about this, and this is what we're going to get into in our next segment, we have pushback. And the pushback is, and let me just give you the name of Dr. Fossil's book. Just the book could have name, the title. Could have pushback. Reversing Human Aging. Regenerative Medicine. Now, there are clearly regeneration of cells, optical nerve cells. I was just reading people who were actually blind had their optical nerve cells regenerated. You can reverse. But there's always this pushback. Aren't you talking about science fiction? When we come back, and is it tampering? And is Dr. Fossil saying that aging itself is the disease and that's why we have to study it and not its symptoms? Well, this does become controversial as well as fascinating, so don't you go anywhere.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me not even a bit, because I am happy and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
Okay, so before we go back on, I just want to ask about the science behind it, because I want to make sure I'm asking a question that's not proprietary, okay, to your company. So you are looking at the entire, at what aging is, not what aging does.
Right. And I'm going to make that same point with regard to the first talk I ever gave at the NIH 25 years ago this year about what science
good.
And what science fiction. It's a good point, so I'm glad you asked that.
Right. And but can I ask you, have you, do you, but what you're actually saying is that telerase, is the answer, is the way to look to intervene in aging itself as opposed to intervening into the symptoms of aging. Is that correct?
Put it simply, yes. It
good.
May not
all
be
right.
the only way we can do this, but it's probably the most effective way we have right now, yes.
Good. All right. So I'm ready, Stuart. We're ready to rock and roll.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
And hello, 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 this is Adrienne Berg. No, I do not have a problem with my voice. I had a paint job done, and we've got sand all over the place here. That's what happens when you're broadcasting from home. This is Generation Bold, the fountain of truth about aging, and I usually do all kinds of business information for you right now. I'm not going to do it because I don't want to waste a second. We have Dr. Fossil here. It's a rare opportunity. Those of you who want to learn more and really become educated about aging in a way that you can understand, simply go to adrienneberg.com, become a newsletter subscriber. It's free, and we'll have a great time. Now, let's go back to this. One of the things we do want to do is reverse aging. If we say it in the right way, it does not sound like science fiction. You say it in the wrong way, Dr. Fossil, you get all kinds of pushback. So let's talk about that. You are looking at what aging does, and that really is at the heart of whether aging itself is a disease and it can be reversed, or it's just its symptoms being reversed. In the real world, if I say to people they could get rid of their gray hair by dyeing it, it's not very controversial. Some people say it's ageist, some people like it, doesn't matter, but it's not, doesn't hit the gut. If I can say, oh, you can do something and you'll never go gray, it'll never happen to you, that's different. People wonder, it's like in the world of woo-woo. How do you deal with that? Because you must deal with that, particularly as the author of Reversing Human Aging.
Well, in some ways, it doesn't matter. That is, whether people call it a disease or not. Example, are hot flashes a disease at menopause? Well, no, they're not a disease. On the other hand, they're not pleasant either. So is it a disease or not? I don't really care. The question is, would somebody like it to be fixed? I could say the same thing with regard to, for example, lockjaw, dying of tetanus. That's a very natural process. It's not a pleasant one. I've seen several patients have that problem, and I'd like to prevent it. And whether somebody defines it as a disease or not, to me, is counting angels in the head of a pin. The question is, can we make people's lives better? And I think the same is true with regard to aging. You know, a gray hair doesn't bother me. It may be a social impediment, but it's not physically uncomfortable. That's not the question. The question is, do people want it changed? And again, it's sort of a matter of discomfort or fear or concern. And if people are concerned about something, I'd like to make human lives better. Not a question of reversing aging, a question of making lives better. Different issue.
Yes, and actually a different approach that can really have people open their arms to this idea, because I never really thought there would be pushback. We would, as lawyers, Dr. Fossil, we would say, you should make a power of attorney, because in case you have great longevity, you'll want somebody to handle your affairs. And half the time or more, people would say, I don't even want to live that long. And I was always shocked, but it was always the case. And I understand that they think of aging, most people think of aging, as detrimental. So let's take a look then at your view. Your view is, we look at what aging is. You're studying what aging is at the Telocyte, which is TelocyteE.com, for those of you who want to learn more. You're looking at interventions in aging itself, which let's say, logically, would also be an intervention in Alzheimer's and a lot more. And is it the telomeres and telomerase that you're seeing as intervening, not in the symptoms, but in actually the process?
Yeah, let me stress that telomeres don't cause aging. They are part of the process. It's like saying that genes and gene expression don't cause aging. They don't, but they're part of the process. The question for me is not what's just the cause of it, but where's the most effective place to intervene to make people's lives better? And, you know, as I said with regard to osteoarthritis, you can intervene by giving somebody an artificial joint, but you might hope there's a better way. And the same thing is true with regard to the aging process in general. There are lots of places I could intervene. I could change your genes. I could change your lifestyle. For example, smokers tend to age faster. People who are out in the sun tend to have faster aging skin. Well, those have a certain amount of an impact on people's lives. But can we do better? And at the other extreme, can we just dye your hair? Yes, true. Can we replace your joint? Yes, true. Can we give you a coronary artery bypass graft? True. But can't we do better than that? And from my perspective, the most effective point of intervention is to actually reset the gene expression to that of younger cells. And again, as I said, that was first accomplished 23 years ago, and in human tissues 21 years ago, and in animals first 10 years ago this year, partially. I mean, we're not good at this, but we're getting better at it. The question is, can we make the organism healthier? The answer is, yeah, apparently we can.
Now, I have actually been at a lab at Albert Einstein with someone you know very well and who's my listeners know, they've read his book, and that's Dr. Nir Barzilai. And I saw two mice, and they were spliced together. One was a young mouse, and the other was an old mouse. And you could see it right there, and they're exchanging blood, and the older mouse got younger. Now, when we look at something like that, we're thinking, again, science fiction, maybe we're tampering, and we're thinking also only in mice. But you are really making this a reality. And you began to write about it in 1996, which I've said that four times already, and the reason I have is I know how early a stage of geroscience that was. Most people say, 1996, not so long ago. It was like ancient history to come up with this. It's a big breakthrough, even the concept of it. How are you now at this stage? Now it's 2021. How far have we come with this?
Actually, let me make a comment about that, about 1996. It was 25 years ago, and I gave the first talk ever at the National Institutes of Health on the topic was reversing human aging. And I started that talk by trying to diffuse that same concern people have. Is this science fiction? Is it wild? And the first thing I said was to the couple of hundred researchers and doctors in that big auditorium at NIH, I said, listen, anyone who leaves this lecture in an hour and thinks you can reverse aging is naive. But any of you who leave this lecture in an hour and think you cannot reverse aging, you are equally naive. If you are sensible, you'll leave here in an hour and you'll say, I don't know, show me the data. So let me show you the data. And what we've been doing in the past 25 years is exactly that. You know, it started with me putting up the first articles in the Journal of American Medical Association about the same time, about 23 years ago. But slowly the data has grown and the data has gotten better. We know we can reverse aging in human cells. We know we can reverse aging in human tissues. But you're not just tissues or cells any more than you're a set of nine hallmarks. You are something much more complicated than that. So can we do it in organisms? And that was the first accomplished in a way that was demonstrably useful 10 years ago at Harvard in a lab by Ron DePinno, and then 9 years ago by Maria Blasco at CNIO in Madrid. And she used a technique that we can take to human trials. And that's where we are now. We're going to finish up with a dog model and redemonstrate it in human cells and move on to human trials.
You know, I have to say this to my audience. I've been looking at this for a long time. You all know that I'm from the world of law and finance, not from the world of medicine. But when I first started to go to the conferences that dealt with this, because it was such a natural outgrowth of retirement and retirement planning, how long would we really be living to plan? All the experiments were mice. In fact, worms, too. Recently, more and more, as I'm involved in looking at the labs and going to the conferences, we have real mammals involved. Now, did you say, am I correct that you said a dog trial?
That's right. We're going to go with a dog trial a little later on this year.
Yeah, all right. So this is something for you to understand because this is the way breakthroughs are made in our current scientific protocol. with going from certain kinds of organisms to higher level organisms and eventually to human trials. We're going to be talking about that when we return. Don't you guys go anywhere.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da.
Now, is this our last segment?
Coming out.
Unbelievable. Okay, Dr. Fossil, this is our last segment. It went so fast. I want to make sure again, is there anything particular that you'd like to bring out that we didn't do to make sure that we didn't get that done this segment?
Mention the textbook. It's still the only textbook in this area out there, and it's not an easy read, but it thoroughly describes what's actually going on at the cellular genetic levels. So mention it.
And how would people get it?
Basically, it's a credibility issue. What's that? You can buy it. It's probably on Amazon.
It is
Cells,
on Amazon.
Aging, and Human Disease. It is a textbook, and the only reason I mention it is to point out I didn't just write about reversing human aging. I wrote a textbook on it too.
Okay.
And the
cells,
more recent book
aging,
that they can read, The Telomerase Revolution, and that's quite readable, and it's in Amazon.com now.
Okay.
And it's up to date too.
Okay, so I will be doing all this. Okay, very good. Cells, Aging, and Human Disease is what it's called, right? That's the textbook.
Yeah, Oxford University Press. Quite the textbook. Totally unreadable.
Okay.
Well, you know academics. They don't try to communicate. They try to impress, and that's not the same thing.
Well, you know, that's what I'm here for. And I've been here for this, not just in medicine, but in law and in finance.
Yes,
and it's all the same.
It's
like a different kind of translator. Okay, Stu, we are ready to rock and roll. Okay.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. This is unaccountably fast. We're in our fourth and last segment, which is awful because there's so much information to give you. But here is something very comforting. I'm going to give you the name of three books. And, of course, if you were a newsletter subscriber, you would get that right in writing on Monday, which this will be in our newsletter for those of you that don't have a pen and paper. But I believe that Dr. Fossil is easy to find on Amazon. And there are three books to look at. I've been speaking because I'm so impressed by how early this was. His 1996 book, Reversing Human Aging. But there are up-to-date books by Dr. Fossil that you should be reading now. Telomerase Revolution, which is very much up-to-date and is not a textbook, but there's a very important textbook, probably the only textbook in this field, Cells, Aging, and Human Disease. Now, it's readable. It is a textbook. It's used in academia, but it is readable, and it's on Amazon as well as all of other Dr. Fossil's books. Now, when we talk about interventions, we talk about intervening usually in symptoms. In fact, we're going to have a wonderful seminar February 26th on exercise as a geroprotector. But again, you would say, Dr. Fossil, that is fun and fine and good, but it doesn't approach aging itself as the issue, but only a symptomology of aging. And we're talking now, as you've indicated to us, that we're pretty far along and advanced in what's going to happen. So let's take a look a little bit future. Everybody is saying 2021, they're talking about the future. What's the future of aging, do you think?
I think that, you know, if I look back and I ask, what is the most important thing we've ever done medically to make people's lives better? It wasn't robotic surgery or a most recent statin or heart transplants. What it really was the microbial theory that allowed us to understand how to cure diseases. And if I look back, it was things like washing hands when you deliver babies that drastically cut both the neonatal and the maternal death rates and made people's lives better. And it was, by the way, it cut the cost of medical care. It didn't raise it, it cut it. I think we're about to do the same thing with regard to age-related diseases. Instead of making a much more expensive and an intervention that doesn't really help much, we're going to do something that actually improves lives dramatically and cuts the cost of healthcare dramatically at the same time.
Now, I have to mention COVID. I want everybody to know, and of course I'm going to write about it, I'm getting the vaccine today. So I'm very, very excited about it, and I'm very nervous about it too. But one of the things that if COVID brought anything to the fore, it is really how badly we are aging and how many comorbidities we age with and how vulnerable we are as a vulnerable population. My joke was, you know, last week I was just an old lady, now I'm a vulnerable population. Do you think that this is going to make a difference? Is it going to bring money into the field of geroscience? Is it going to bring press to look at it? Because I'm going to tell you something, Dr. Fossil. I write about this all the time, and I have a spell checker. And every time I put in geroscience, it changes it to geoscience. Even my spell checker doesn't know what geroscience. I'm not kidding you. This is true. And I used a few different programs. So this is under-the-radar stuff. Do you think COVID is shining a light, or are we going to all forget once the vaccine is available to everybody?
No, I think it does shine a light. Incidentally, I managed to get vaccinated back in November. I volunteered for one of the trials, and I actually felt ill after I got it. I've never been so happy to be ill in my entire life.
Great.
I just had a headache and chills, and I thought, good, wonderful. But, yes, you know, if you look at the mortality rate for COVID, we know it goes up exponentially with age. And the reason for that, I guessed back in February, was that what you're looking at is aging cells, that is senescent cells in the immune system. And in fact, that's been measured by Maria Blasco's group in Madrid again, and that's exactly what you see. So in principle, I think what we could do is we could use the same approach that we're about to take to Alzheimer's trials and to other age-related diseases. We could use that same approach, for example, for COVID, and it wouldn't prevent you from getting COVID. But theoretically, we could take somebody who is at my age 70 and bring my risk factor down to that of, say, a 30-year-old, which is a lot less, thank you, if I could reset aging in my cells. Again, theoretically entirely doable, practically pretty quickly.
Okay, now I'm going to ask the question that I am most interested in when it comes to geroscience and age reversal. And that is, it's really an equality question. Assuming success, is this something that people will be buying and therefore only people who can pay for it are going to have it? Do you think it's something that the FDA is going to approve and it's going to be prescribed? How do you expect it to get to the people who are listening right now?
Yeah, let me make a general comment and then give you specific numbers. The general comment is the one I already made, which is I think that we can actually lower the cost of healthcare rather than raise it. You know, again, if I look at a lot of the most recent advances, and that includes some of the gene therapies, it becomes very expensive. It doesn't mean they're not effective. It just means that they're very expensive. I think we can do better. So I'm going to give you a napkin calculation on Alzheimer's. Right now, for many states in the U.S., and it depends which state and where you are. For example, Maine, you're looking at Portland versus some of the further north areas. The last year of life of Alzheimer's in a nursing home runs well in excess of $100,000. And that's taking care of patients without making them better, without curing Alzheimer's or reversing Alzheimer's or even stopping it or even slowing it. That's expensive. Our best calculations on napkins is that we can actually cure it for something on the order of, and again, this is not an exact number, this is on the order of $5,000 a patient, which is a lot less than $100,000. And that $100,000 doesn't treat anybody, the $5,000 would. So yes, I think what we can do is make people's lives better, cut the cost of medical care, and do a much better thing than we've done before with regard to medical care for a long time.
You know, I just took a look again. Aging Analytics is a group that you know very well, and they invest in things that have to do with longevity, and they put out a lot of statistics. We spend the most money of all countries in all the world on healthcare, 18% of our GNP. And we're kind of in the middle to low middle of what our health span is, meaning how long we live and mm-hmm. how well and how healthy we are. So we're not getting what we would call the bangs for the buck on this. Now, before we end, we're coming very close to the end. I really would like to ask you, if you could wave a magic wand and you could have one thing change, whether it's regulation, whether it's funding, whether it's the attitude of the public, whatever it is, to help you in your work, what would it be?
for people to actually try to understand how aging works, and not you know, the improving healthcare is not a matter of spending money any more than it is in education. It's a matter of spending money wisely, putting it in the right place. Again, to use that Indiana Jones analogy, people dig in the wrong place. We've been digging in the wrong place. Big pharma companies have been digging in the wrong place. What I would hope is that people would step back and say, what are we doing wrong? And then step forward.
Well, I thank you so much. That's wonderful inspiration. I hope folks who matter with regard to the power behind our healthcare system will be listening. We have a whole new group of characters now in Washington, and that we're trying to make an impact. So I thank you so much, Dr. Fossil. And you know what I'm going to say to the rest of you guys? Even though I think we're coming to the end here, I think that safety, though, should never, ever be relinquished. Stay safe. If you have to sequester, stay sequestered, but be as active and proactive as you possibly can. And as I say every single week, stay in or get out there, kids, but make it happen.
I'm inappropriate.
Well, that was great. Did you have fun? I like it for the people.
Fun.
Good. So thank you. This was really good. I know this is a lot of time for you to give, but we will promote it in every possible way. Okay?
Adrian, do you have any of those books? And if not, I'll send you PDFs of anything you want.
You could send me. I actually have the Revolution book.
Okay.
But I just moved, and I have books in boxes. I moved across country during COVID. Wow. It was not easy. But anything you send me would be wonderful, because I do a lot of writing in a retail way, and yet I try to weave in some of the things that are more sophisticated, you would say, so that people do start to understand and move the needle a lot. And I would appreciate it. It would be wonderful. And
well,
the way to do
as
that
I sometimes say to people
email.
About that article,
my regular email that you've
about,
been using.
I will. I sometimes say about both that article on Alzheimer's and about the textbook, I recommend at least one glass of wine before you try it. They're not easy. So it is.
Well, believe me, my whole life has been, you know, as I say, if I can understand it, anybody can understand it. But it takes a real long time to be able to get it. Now I get it. But that's great, and I hope you stay involved with Catalyst and with Connexum. I mean, you have, so it's going to be great to just keep seeing you and at the conferences, and you know, having you at the conferences and speaking and so on. Okay.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
That's wonderful, and good luck on this. I hope you get all the funding and all the success you need with the dog trials.
It looks like we're about to be closing on funding next week for $30 million, so let's see what happens. Thank you.
That's wonderful. Fingers are crossed. Take care. Oh, wait a minute. How
Thanks.
Long did your chills
yeah.
and headache last? I want to know, because I'm a hypochondriac.
Oh, that was so funny. I volunteered for trials back actually in March, and then Johnson & Johnson took me up on it in October. They injected me November 10th, and I came home, and within about 3 or 4 hours, I found myself feeling exhausted. Went to bed at 6 p.m., which I can't imagine. Had a long sleeve T-shirt on, a fuzzy bathrobe, and 4 blankets. And at 2 a.m., I've got a headache and chills and aches and a huge grin on my face. Because as I say, I thought, this is great. And the next morning, it was slightly red and swollen and itching where the spot was. But all my other symptoms resolved within about 12 hours.
Great. Good to know. Okay. Thank you. Very good.
Thank you. Take
care.
Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.